You're tuned to Vibes FM. I am Sarah C, and our special guest today is Tessellated. He's made a massive impact for such a seemingly short career, and we're here with him to find out the full story. Tessellated, welcome to Vibes FM.
Thank you, Sarah. It's great to be here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well, really, really well. I have to say, of all the artists that I've researched, I have never been quite so fascinated with an artist's name. Tessellated means mosaic, but it also has a maths connotation, and it also has like those Escher staircases. There were references to Egyptian tiling from 4000 BC. Which of those things were you thinking of when you named yourself Tessellated?
I think it was, you know, I mean, all those are kind of interrelated. It's been a thing in art. I think for me, why it clicked is kind of mosaic connotation of it, in that my music is made up of many styles. So in a sense, it's kind of like a mosaic, you know, bringing many different elements together to form something brand new and seamless.
And it also, I think I read somewhere that you said if you weren't a musician, you'd like to be a scientist.
Maybe science, maybe art, you know, I dabble in many different things. From like same thing, like different sports and painting and photography. So honestly, I don't know what I'd really be doing if it wasn't music, but definitely something creative or something scientific, just something that interests me and gets me excited for sure.
Well, that's what I thought. And it's the same with your music too, isn't it? Everyone tries to put artists in a box, but we're going to have to make a Venn diagram for you. Like a reggae part, and there'd be like a jazz part. There'd be like a dancehall part. There's like a world fusion part. Maybe even a Beatles cover part. I'm not so sure. But you'd have to have a Venn diagram because the box is not happening for you.
Yeah, I think I've never heard that one before. I'm going to have to start using the Venn diagram. But yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because I don't think there's any person in the world that listens to one genre of music, you know? So why then should artists be confined to making one genre of music when that's not where they're influenced by? So for me, I consume a lot of music. I'm inspired by many different cultures. I just take what I love about different things and put them together.
I think so. I think there are people that lean towards a certain style of music. I think that much is true. Funnily enough, I think there's a kind of a roots element to everybody that comes from Jamaica. And I think then that's just a platform that you build upon.
Exactly. You know, I think where you come from is naturally going to influence your style heavily, and you're going to have like a signature feeling or a signature sound, just because, you know, that's the culture you were raised in. But then, you know, there's a platform to expand. And, you know, honestly, I think that's honestly been the reality of it for a long time, but the perception of it is a bit different. Because, you know, even like classic, obviously, the first person many people think of when they think of reggae is Bob Marley. But even Bob Marley did a lot of fusion in his music and experimented with a lot of different styles. So, yeah, it's really just, I think it's just about expanding upon, you know, what you've been influenced by and what you naturally can create, and just making things that are true to yourself and things that genuinely excite you.
I don't even think you can hang it on the artist. I think a lot of it is also to do with the channel. For example, Morgan Heritage, very famous for reggae, but I know Tramps has done many voiceovers on dance music, and it's just that maybe the reggae sort of people aren't listening to those kind of souls. So I think these things have always been happening, but I think the artists in Jamaica have now become so potent that they can't be ignored anymore.
Exactly. That's the thing, you know. Because Jamaican music and Jamaican artists have had such a huge impact on the world. But I think this next generation of artists is really just coming into their own and building up a wave that's so powerful that, as you said, it cannot be ignored.
That's what I actually think it is. Now, you started when you were young playing the drums.
Yes, my first instrument. I was like 3 or 4 years old.
And where do you come across a steel pan in Jamaica?
So steel pan is like, I mean, it's pretty common in the Caribbean, you know. I was part of, there's like a little kids music school, you know, that I attended, that was, I think, very, you know, instrumental, no pun intended, in my musical development. As so, you know, I didn't learn too much music theory at that age, or too much technical aspects. But, you know, I just learned to play some songs, and I had that feeling ingrained in me, and I understood what it was to create music. So one of the things that after drums was steel pan. So there was a little bit of like a steel pan orchestra with a bunch of kids. I can probably find some videos of me like 6, 7 years old, like playing the steel pan. And yeah, that was like my first, you know, journey into a musical performance, and just really like enjoying music as a creator rather than just a listener.
I think that's good though. If you don't have it as like a serious lesson in theory, you actually get to enjoy it. And I think that's maybe where exactly. The spirit of your music comes from, because you're actually just enjoying yourself.
100%. Because, you know, I think a lot of the time people, or at least what I've seen in certain places, is that people try to teach kids music rather than teach them how to enjoy it, right? So you may not understand why, you know, learning music theory is good for you and your development, and you just don't really want it. You want to have fun. But when, as a kid, like, you know, learn to have fun, and you maybe learn to play a couple chords and stuff and a couple songs, then later on, you know, when I was a teenager, I understood, okay, now I understand why learning this and this and that is going to help my musical development. So I wanted to do it. But I already had the foundation of just playing, so I was able to like more rapidly progress in that era.
And then I think from there you went to DJing into production.
Definitely. So DJ, so same thing, like in high school, picked up DJing, you know, I got really into electronic music, Major Lazer, you know, Martin Garrix, Tiesto, all those guys. And I just started DJing, and I started actually fusing, you know, like dancehall songs with electronic songs. So I'd make my own mashups, and I would do sets that were 50% dancehall and 50% you know, EDM. And from there, it just naturally led into production, as I wanted to get deeper and deeper and explore the ideas. And then in the production realm, it just naturally progressed from something that was a lot more electronic to something that was much more organic. I think that's just because where my roots in music were based. And then from there, I started writing and singing on my beats.
I think success attracts success too. And one of the things that I think you do very well is use the tools that you've got. Lots of people think, if only I had this, if only I could do that. Whereas you're putting your stuff up on SoundCloud, and then amazing things happen.
No, definitely. You know, I think nowadays the barrier to entry is really so low, that there's no real excuse if you have access to certain things. If you have access to a computer, right, you can do a lot, you know, just production-wise. Even my first big song, Pine and Ginger, I recorded that in a closet, just using some clothes to kind of dampen the sound, and like a $50 mic that I picked up, and my school computer. And that was it.
And that one went all the way, didn't it? I think VP picked it up for Reggae Gold. I think a major label came and licensed that as well. I think for a first song, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was my first song. It was my first like big song, you know? So it was the first song.
Exposure, it was what brought you to everyone's attention.
Exactly. And you know, that's the thing. Like, if I had waited and said, oh, you know, like I wish I could get into a proper studio, I wish I could afford a more expensive mic or a better computer, or I could set up my room to be, you know, more sonically sound, like, would have never happened. And certain things you just have to go in the moment, and really it's just about making good music, good writing, good composition over even like the perfect technical song.
That's right. I'm really big on learn by doing. Now, apparently, before that, you wrote a song which is, I guess, based on telling the simple truth. This song now goes on to become a Billboard Jazz number one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I got this in the right order. Then Apple come along through SoundCloud again. Big up SoundCloud.
Yeah, through SoundCloud.
You for using the tools you have and put it into that AirPod bounce ad, which is fantastic.
But yes.
It's not enough that just I like it. The Emmy Awards Board like it too. And when will we find out whether that actually gets an Emmy?
So I believe that September 20th is a ceremony.
So much luck with that. That's amazing. I think I made it sound really simple and easy, and I'm sure that there was work and collaboration that went on with that. But that's such an amazing thing. And that was actually the first song, right?
So that song, so interesting enough, that was the first song I ever released as a vocalist, right? That was the first song I was confident enough to release as a vocalist. However, it didn't gain traction till long afterwards. So, you know, Pine and Ginger came and that gained traction. And it was after Pine and Ginger now that this song ended up picking up traction off the tail end of that.
It's such an amazing story, but I feel that you probably are like one of those swans that you've been paddling furiously under the water and everyone just sees this sort of glide to success. No idea of what really has happened and how
it probably worked. I think that's definitely a thing that's in the industry in general, you know. Everybody sees the end result, but not a lot of the, you know, the back work that goes into it, you know, because even in the creation of a song, right now it might take me 12 hours to make a song, but it's taken me like 7 years of practicing to be able to do that. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think people see what they want to see, you know. I don't think a lot of people really care too much about all the work that goes in. They just want to see the final product, and I'm fine to deliver the final product to them so they can enjoy it.
I think it's probably testament to how well you're doing your job.
Thank you.
And I think that there's a whole art scene sort of burgeoning in Jamaica as well. And I think it's probably come on the heels of the reggae revolution or whatever you want to call it. And I think the Jamaican people have got a bit smarter in the business. And so now everybody's got their crews and they've got their art people and they've got their promotion people. And they no longer have to go to people in other countries to help them get their stuff. I think you can actually get to your own point.
100%.
Become a lot more self-sufficient. And everybody just looks like they're having such a great time. If you can get Naomi Cowan to be your drone pilot.
Yeah,
you know, things are going pretty well.
No, definitely. I think it's just a thing where, you know, it's a very tight-knit scene. Everyone is really genuinely friends with each other, right? And so everyone, you know, kind of plays off each other's strengths and allows each other to just flourish. Like, even right now, like, all my artwork has either been done by myself or other Jamaican artists, right? Like, same thing, all the people who are working, all the instruments that are played for the most part of my music, it's all within Jamaica because, you know, those are my friends and they're amazing at what they do. So why wouldn't I use them? And it's just a thing, I think my generation that's coming up is just much more exposed to, you know, art from all over, and they understand the standard that needs to be met and they're willing and able to meet that standard. And then furthermore, people are even willing to just help where they can. So like with Naomi, I needed, you know, Howard John, I needed someone to shoot it for me. I was like, hey, can you shoot this for me? She was like, cool, you know. It's how it goes.
It was lovely. Now let's talk about the new single, because I think you hooked up with some British producers.
Yes, some British producers. So I mean, I went to the UK, I've been to the UK when I was younger, right? But I went to the UK for the first time for music around this time last year. You know, I went to like Notting Hill and linked up with a bunch of people and just had an amazing time. I felt very at home in the UK actually, because, you know, I know that UK and Jamaican culture are naturally intertwined, you know, on a very deep level, but it's a different thing to actually experience it and to be in a place away from home that you still feel so understood. Because, you know, in America, where I normally stay, people don't understand Jamaican culture at all. Like, they see it as like they'll appreciate it on some level as like a novelty, but it's in no way a staple. Like, reggae and dancehall is something that's over here in a box. Whereas in the UK, it's a part of mainstream culture, you know? So it was a great experience, and I linked up with Footsteps and Bayo before I left. I had a really dope studio session and knocked out a few different tracks, some of which have yet to come out. And, you know, No Answer was part of that. They're very heavily influenced by like African scene too. And, you know, it was one of those natural collaborations that just flowed from the vibes. Then later on, I had a space, I only written one verse, and I felt like the right person to get on this track had to be somebody from the African continent. And you know, it ended up working out that Kurian heard it, loved it, recorded his verse on it, and yeah, that's how the song came together.
Well, we're waiting for great things for that song too. Is there an EP coming? Is there a project coming? Is there going to be a culmination of all this? Is there going to be sort of, I guess, almost like a portfolio, I want to call it, not an EP?
Yes, so definitely. You know, up to now, I've just released singles. I've released a few singles over the last couple of years. But now I have finished my first real body of work. And No Answer is actually the first song off that project. It's called Tropics Volume 1. And it's going to be releasing in about 2 months, right? So it's going to be 7 tracks. And it's not really, I wouldn't call it a full album, but it's definitely a nice portfolio, as you said, that gives a solid idea to a listener of really what I'm about as an artist and what they can expect from me, you know, in the coming months and years.
That's brilliant. I think you have a really good way of expressing, not kind of express, not impress.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We really do appreciate it. Good luck with the Emmys.
No worries. Thank you. Thank you.
And the new single is wonderful. And you will let us know, won't you, when the EP is coming out?
100%. I have one more single coming before the EP too, so I'll make sure that you guys get that.
That's brilliant.
As soon as it's out.
Lovely. Thank you.